it's birthday time right here at 89.3 FM, you know how you can help us celebrate. I'm Gloria Minot. This is We Ourselves. Ambrose Eileen Sr. normally is right here, but this morning I am sitting in for him. We're discussing Amnesty International's upcoming festival, and we have three women that we're focusing on this morning, and they'll talk about their different roles in this festival. My first guest is Angelica Harris. She joins me this morning to talk about the Amnesty International mini-conference that's taken place. The other guest is Robina Niaz, and she is the founder of Turning Point. It's a New York organization. She's the executive director, and it's an organization that looks out for the well-being of women and families. And Lynn Twynan, her organization is Courage Network. And of course, they're all joining me this morning to talk about the work they do and their participation in this upcoming event. Ladies, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Gloria. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for joining me. Let me begin with Angelica Harris, and I'm going to have her tell us about her organization and what it does to make sure that the well-being of women and children and families are taken care of in a time and a world where that's not ordinarily the case. Angelica Harris, how are you?
I'm good today. How are you, Gloria?
I'm doing well. Your organization, what does it do?
My organization is called the Excalibur Reading Program. It is an exciting literacy and arts program for children ranging from the age 3 to the age 18. What I do in my room is I bring us all children from my neighborhood. I live in Glendale, Queens, but all children from New York City together, where they impoverished families, families who are suffering from the economy. Funds are raised in order to help these families and help children learn about reading and bringing the excitement of reading to these children. Also, within the reading, I use the characters of the books, no matter if it's books about Winnie the Pooh or my titles, which are The Quest for Excalibur, Excalibur and the Holy Grail, and Excalibur Reclaims Her King, or other titles from other authors. I bring those to the forum, and I use the characters to help children and young adults talk about the issues of today. How does the story relate to something going on in your family, whether it's an illness, domestic violence, abuse, learning disorders, and such. And I help children take those little characters out of the book, whether it's Winnie the Pooh or it's Lightning McQueen from Cars or it's Bumblebee or Optimus Prime from Transformers. And I help them take those characters and allow those characters to help them speak through the characters to teach them how to give them voice as to what is going on in their lives.
I know. Go ahead.
Ask me a question. Go ahead.
I was just thinking, just listening to you, that you just said that you use characters from the Transformers to other characters to help in this learning process. But you chose Excalibur as the name for your organization. When I think of Excalibur, I think of the Knights of the Round Table. I think of King Arthur's court. I think of all the things that go with that ancient story.
Yes.
But you used an ancient backdrop to deal with modern-day problems. Could you tell us how you juxtapose both of those?
Yes. Well, when I was as a young girl in high school, I fell in love with King Arthur through my teacher, Mr. George Trehalis. He was a wonderful teacher in William Cullen Bryant High School here in Astoria, Queens. And I fell in love with King Arthur when I was 16, through him. And I found a kindredship through King Arthur. Seeing that King Arthur was alone, growing up alone, and having to learn about his powers alone through Merlin, I was very much alone living at home in an abusive background. And through Arthur, I found this kindredship where I was able to see myself as Arthur, as a young girl, drawing Excalibur from the stone within my faith in myself to get over the abusive situation that I was at home, I was living through at home, and through the distrust that I had through my parents. I was unfortunately molested when I was 13 by my own uncle, and no one ever trusted me because my uncle, unfortunately, you know, drew lies about me and the family, and said, of course, it was all lies, and I didn't ended up being mistrusted by my own relatives and my own parents. And Arthur also had to learn to build trust within England as the king, because no one knew that he ever was a king or he even existed. So through the sword Excalibur, I drew my own empowerment in building my storyline to help my character, Ariana, become empowered and find her voice, say what happened to her. And my character, Ariana, in all three books, brings you on a journey to find her holy grail within herself, which is empowerment to get through everything that she went through in her life. So I weave the social problems of the 6th century and the social problems of modern-day Americana within the tale, and I bring out both issues and for my readers to enjoy, along with myth and magic and a hybrid language that I created. It's the old Celtic Druid and old Latin for Ariana to speak when she's speaking to Merlin and to Arthur, for all of them to converse in this magical language to empower all of them to get through everything that they've been through in their lives.
All right, that was Angelica Harris. She's going to be with us throughout the program. Now let me go on to our next guest, Robina Niaz. She is the founder of Turning Point. It's an organization for women and families. She's also the executive director. Good morning and welcome to you.
Hi. Thank you.
You're going to have to speak directly into your phone for me so we can hear you quite well.
All right.
How did your organization come about?
Turning Point for Women and Families.
We still can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Much better, but you're going to have to keep that pace because you'll keep fading out and we won't hear your story if that happens.
My mother.
Okay.
The Turning Point was founded in September of 2004 here in New York City. And this is the first nonprofit. Apart from
okay, you are still really, really very low. We're going to try to see if we can make this work because everyone has a story to tell and we would like our listening audience to be able to hear those stories. You're listening to WPFW Radio. It's 11 minutes after 10 o'clock. This is We Ourselves. Ambrose Eileen Sr. Is the host of this program. I am sitting in for him today. My name is Gloria Minot. The voice you just heard is the voice of Robina Niaz, and she is the founder of Turning Point, an organization that deals with the issues surrounding Muslim women and families. Let me go to Lynn Twynan, and we'll come back to all our guests momentarily. But Lynn Twynan, your organization is called Courage Network. What do you do?
Hi, thank you for having me today. Courage Network is an online survivors and organizations worldwide. We're a progressive community, constantly adding new information and resources, and we seek out the experience of survivors and advocates in order to increase awareness of prevention. Our website is www.couragenetwork.com, all one word. And the reason for the community is, you know, we have all different types of online and social networking platforms out there on the web. And, you know, as a survivor of domestic violence, I figured that it would also be good to have a place just for domestic violence and a place that would be well maintained and a place where people would be able to come and get recent and up-to-date information. And a part of our work that we do is we feature the work of our members and those in the field, their blog articles, their writing, their artwork, their stories, and in particular, we constantly conduct interviews. And for example, we just did an interview with Mildred Muhammad. She's the ex-wife of Lacey Snyder. We also featured the maid of Georgia, Shalada Moten, and she's also the founder of the Dating Violence Prevention And also Tony Porter of A Call to Men. And these are all advocates working across the country, working with the issue of domestic violence. And recently, we finished an interview with actor Victor Rivers. And he is well known in the Hollywood and celebrity community, but also as an activist of domestic violence. We just finished up that interview that will be published through the website this week. And we also reached out to international organizations such as Breakthrough and their Belvajal campaign, and they are supporting women and the community of the country of India in helping to stop domestic violence.
When I listen to the stories and in the background and the what made each of you decided that organizations like yours were vital and badly needed, I hear a recurring theme. I hear, for example, from Lynn and Angelica about being survivors of domestic violence. If it's not too much to ask, let me ask you, Lynn, to tell us a little about your personal story.
Sure, absolutely. Well, I am a survivor of intimate partner violence and also childhood. But when I tell my story, I primarily speak from a position of being a childhood survivor because I identified early on that was the root cause of all of my PTSD that I experienced growing up. And my mother is an immigrant from the Philippines and my father is American. They met as pen pals back in the late 70s. And when my mother came to the United States, it was the first time that she had ever laid eyes on my father. After they had corresponded and communicated for about a year. And after she came to the U.S. within about 30 days, my father became psychologically and emotionally abusive and also financially as well. He isolated her and threatened to take away her status if she didn't do certain things that in the Philippines. And my mother was pressured by her family to stay with my father as a young 23-year-old so that hopefully the rest of her members would have a better life. So culturally, she had pressures on her that were very acceptable for Filipino women at the time. And later on, they got married and they stayed together for about 10 years. And after they split up, however, my mother was unable to rightfully gain custody of me and my father gained. And then he began to abuse me. And he abused me in isolation. He took me out of school for a year, claiming that he claimed that he was the only person that loved me. We lived in extremely run-down and unsafe conditions, to the point that we had holes in the walls where we lived. We were run down. There were no locks on the doors. He separated me from the rest of my family. I had no communication with them for over 10 years. And so it was just a series of just very bad and unfortunate things that happened to me. And that was just the tip of it. There was also animals that brutally abused animals in front of me. And I later on discovered that he was a victim of abuse. years, I kind of kept bottled up inside and didn't tell anybody about it, not even my mother, because I had to go into a survival mode in order to cope and heal. And thankfully enough, I was able to graduate from school on time and on to take college. And I was able to live a normal life. But, you know, the resilience aspect of this is that I attribute my struggle and my ability to survive to my family. And so that's how I think about the issue, the childhood survivor primarily, and the fact that there needs to be more prevention and more awareness for younger people starting in even in elementary school, talking about healthy relationships. I feel that as time goes on, you know, we're not going to be able to solve this issue of domestic violence, not until we start talking to our young people. I had later discovered that my father, too, was a victim of domestic. His father was alcoholic and emotionally void and was very hard on the young men. And so now that we have so many opportunities,
all right, the voice you just heard is the voice of Lynn Twinen. Courage Network is our organization, and you just heard her story. You're listening to WPFW Radio, 89.3 FM. I'm Gloria Wynard, sitting in for Ambrose Ine Sr. We're talking about Amnesty International Festival that's coming up. These women are participating in that festival, and we're talking about some of the very painful subjects that will be discussed, and the very painful subjects that are part of our basically our zeitgeist. We seem to, not give enough attention to these issues, and talking about them, discussing them on a daily basis and regularly, as painful as they might be, probably that's one of the ways that we can work together to make sure that this doesn't happen the way it is happening right now. Let me go back to Ravina Niaz and see if I can get her to talk to us about Turning Point and the work she does. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right, I can hear you. We want to hear the story that you're about to tell. So would you remind your listeners once again as to the work your organization does?
Yes. I am from Turning Point for Women and Families, and I founded this in December of 2004. It is the first nonprofit in New York City to direct women and violence. And it is very critical to do this work, especially in the post-19th of America, where Muslims generally feel under siege and under violence and watched. But this is an issue that happens across the board. Religions. And post-9/11 America made it, that there's been tremendous denial around this issue in all communities. What post-9/11 America did was make it harder for women to come out and speak for various reasons, but also because their abusive husbands are trapped in relationships because of their immigration status or because of their inability to speak English. Many of them are immigrants and they are deeply isolated because they came to this country after being married to now using them, and they have nobody to turn to. And so I decided, I've been doing this work for many years. I'm a social worker by education, and I said, well, somebody's got to be a survivor. And I'm a survivor myself. I came to the U.S. 20 years ago after marrying somebody who had lived here much longer than I had, and even though I was educated and I was a professional, and I traveled the world and had a very family, I came here and I found myself deeply isolated, trapped in a relationship that did not allow me to be who I was, to treat the way I wanted to be. There was a lot of emotional and financial and psychological issues. And but I was lucky. The marriage ended, even though he kept pressing me about my green card and all those things. I didn't do what he asked me to do, and I didn't want to wait. And I stood my ground, thank God, and came out of it. And that is when I decided that I was going to dedicate my life to working against the Mental Health Crisis. Many years I worked for the mainstream organization. And then, as I said, it was not the problem. And I agreed with what Lynn just earlier said about addressing this issue early on. Otherwise, we're not going to get too far. That's part of the work we do, constantly raising awareness about the impact of mental violence on families and communities and society. And children are trapped in abusive relationships. They're often asked about it. How do you make it a good day for young people to acknowledge that this is happening and that they learn to recognize it very early on?
Let's discuss that for a moment. First of all, where did you come from? And how, because I heard Lynn talk about not only the pressures within the family, added to the fact that she was abused, her mother was abused, and her father abused her in turn. How difficult is it for these women to come to you with their story?
Extremely difficult, even though we speak, our staff and I speak several languages from South Asian region, and we share the space, and we want to be with them at all times. That's extremely difficult for them. There's a sense of shame, there's a loss of self-esteem, loss of self-confidence, and all of that compounds their ability to even talk to us, knowing that we are professionals in this field and we are doing this work. It is extremely difficult. And that's one of our biggest challenges, to get women to talk, to come to us. So we go into spaces where women can be found, like mosques, like Islamic centers, like centers, or other events in the community. And we try and talk to them, not as if it was their issue, but it was something that we expected a lot of them, and we try and kind of break that sense of shame. And once they connect with us, then it becomes easier. Some of them have become quite vocal through the help that they have received from counseling, through just knowing that there are people who are not judging them, that it's not their fault. And they then go out and talk to their friends about it. Even if they're not able to say that they are themselves survivors, they will reach out to other women and say, please help, go to Turning Point. They know what's going on.
You're listening to WPFW Radio. My guest, you just heard from Ravina Niyaz, founder of Turning Point, and she's also the executive director. It's an organization for women and families. You just heard her talk about her work. And, of course, before that, you heard from Lynn Twynan. Her organization, it's an online network called Courage Network. And let me go back to Angelica Harris. Her organization is Excalibur. And she talked, she was the first speaker to discuss the work of her organization. Angelica, you alluded to the fact that you were abused by an uncle. It was extremely difficult for you to tell the adults in your family, your parents and other adults, about what was happening. When you finally did, no one believed you because he managed to weave a story that made you look like a liar. Would you talk to us a little about what you went through?
Yes. Well, I was 13 years old, and my grandmother, who was stricken in a wheelchair from diabetes, needed help. So my mom and dad sent me to my grandmother's house to help her with the cooking and the laundry and the shopping and to do things that she could no longer do on her feet. And while I was there, after helping my grandmother and enjoying being with her every day, or at least on the weekend after school, my uncle started coming in, and unfortunately, he was a crack addict and would come in all high, and he'd start groping me and touching me in places that no 13-year-old child should be touched. And I mean, my uncle was a 30-year-old man at the time, living with my grandmother and divorced, and he had a 6-year-old son at the time. And he would touch me, and I'd ask him to stop, and he would touch me again, and I would ask him to stop and push his hands away. And then I get ready to go home because it was time to get on the bus and go home and be in the safety of my own home. And look at me and tell me, don't tell your parents. And I look at him and I say, just leave me alone. Just leave me alone, Uncle Sal. Leave me alone. And he would say, don't tell your parents. And he knew I was angry. And there was one day where I actually pushed his hand away in a violent manner. I mean, I was 13 and he was touching me and I didn't want to be touched. I felt uncomfortable. And of course I did. I was a child, and he was a grown man touching a child in ways that he shouldn't have. And I pushed him away, and he said to me, you're in trouble now. And all I know is I ran out of the house. I kissed my grandmother on the cheek. I ran out of the house. Excuse me. And I got on the bus to go home. I lived in Woodside, and they lived in Massabesic. And by the time I got home, I walked in the door and my mother was yelling at me. What is this I hear that you took money from grandma and you didn't go to the store? What is this I hear that you didn't listen to her? And I looked at my mother. I said, wait, Mom, I did everything. I did everything that grandma wanted me to do. And before you knew it, my mother was tended on being abusive as it was at the time also. Before you know it, I was getting a slap in the face, or she took my father's strap and she whipped my back and told me, how dare you lie about your grandmother? And I just looked at her and I said, but I'm not lying. I did everything I had to do. And it happened again. I would go back to the house, and I didn't want to go back with my uncle there. And I would go back and help my grandmother and help my little cousin, and then before you knew it, well, I was either in the kitchen while not under my grandmother's eyes, or if I went into the backyard to do anything, or wherever I went in the house, there he would be, trying to touch me, trying to kiss me, trying to do things that he should never do to a 13-year-old child. And then when I pushed him away and I swore, I said, I'm going to tell my father. And he smacked me in the face. And he said, no, you won't, because I am your uncle, and I am your elder, and you will listen to me. And I said, I don't have to listen to you. You're not my father. And I tried to get on the phone. He pulled the phone away from me. And then by the time I got home again, it was another lie. I didn't do the chores. I answered him back when he told me to do something. And before you knew it, I was under the lash again of my mom, where she would hit me or grab the wooden spoon and beat me. And I would ended up happening too as I got older when my mother went into her changes. I'm thinking of it as going into her changes. She became violent. But I would try to explain things to my mom when I was 16. I had bought a ticket to see Elvis Presley in concert. And she wouldn't let me go. And she kept telling me, you don't love me. You want to go to the concert because you don't love me. And before you knew it, she took the knife out of the drawer and either tried to kill herself or kill me. And this went on and on and on for a very long time. And she tried to kill me twice. I was raped by my boyfriend because I was trying to kill her. There were so many instances that happened because of being molested when I was a child. not being able to talk about what happened to me with my parents, not being trusted by my parents anymore, running into the arms of a boyfriend that I thought would help me as I got older, and then being raped by him. So what I'm trying to do within my reading program and within, and when I try to talk to teenagers and what I do in my book, it took me to write my first book, The Quest for Excalibur. When Ariana goes back in time to the land of Arthur, Merlin tries to tell Arthur who this woman is, this strange woman is who comes into his life. And it was at that point when it was 20 some odd years later, when Merlin takes the water from the lake in Avalon and throws it up in the air, and there is Ariana, well, actually my race. And that was the first time in my life that I was ever able to bring out my violence, what happened to me, reveal my demon through the voice of Ariana. And that is, you know, that is my story. I got married later on. I married a good man. I have a son and a daughter. But unfortunately, my husband has Tourette's syndrome. My son has Tourette's syndrome. My husband suffers severely with a mood disorder. And I found out through Arthur that his son also had some issues growing up. And through that kindredship, I was able to form my story, the Excalibur series, where I bring my readers into this world of empowerment. And I show my readers through Ariana and through her voice and through the voice of Joseph, Ariana's son, that there is a way out. There is a way of surviving. There is a way through empowerment within the text of the story and within the text of your own life.
All right, let me remind your listeners, it's 25 minutes before 11 o'clock. We are Sal's is the program. I'm doing my not sitting in for Ambrose Hylian Sr. The number to call to make your comment is 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. You can call and ask a question or make a comment. I know we have all three ladies on the line, and our lines are limited, but let's see what we can get done. And just to continue, Angelica, before I go back to the other two ladies, I am wondering if Ariana ever met Sir Mordred.
Yes, she did. Yes. She meets Sir Mordred on the battlefield right before. Mordred is very prevalent in the book, in all the books. And she witnesses the battle between father and son before Arthur and Mordred take each other's lives on the battlefield. And it is at that point in book one where she becomes the guardian of Excalibur, where Merlin puts the sword, Merlin and the Lady of the Lake put the sword of empowerment in her hand. And it is at that point where she knows that her future lay within her life, that she must take the sword, and she must find the Holy Grail within herself, and she must help others find the Holy Grail within themselves, whether it's being the survivor of domestic violence, or it's finding, or it's overcoming an illness like Tourette's syndrome, ADHD, obsessive compulsive behavior, bipolar disorder, borderline personality disorder, whatever the disorders are in your life, cancer. This is what the sword was put in her hand for. And find the Holy Grail. Be able to put the Holy Grail, as I said, could be anything. Or something religious, something spiritual, going back to your faith after it's lost, after so many things have been taken from you. So people who are lost in your lives, the loss of a parent who you love, the loss of a good friend, finding the Holy Grail to overcome loss. This is what was given to Ariana in through Excalibur, and this is what I want to bring. This is what my program brings to my children and my community. Be able to, for them to find identify their holy grail early on in life, before someone, you know, before they are lost in the system, lost in their lives. At least they could find it at the age of 5, or at the age of 10, or at the age of 18, to be able to search and find what they need in life in order to become successful adults.
All right.
What my program is about.
Okay. Angelica Harris, our organization, of course, is you know, you've heard about her. Talk about it. Excalibur and the work that it does. Also, my guests, other guests are Robina Niaz, and she's the founder and executive director of Turning Point. Lynn Twynan, her online organization is Courage Network. We'll take a break. Be back.
The Pacifica Foundation's Pacifica National Board in-person meeting will be held April 23rd through April 25th in Studio City, California. There will be time reserved for public comment each day during scheduled open session times. For open session times, other details, and additional contact information, please go to wpfw.org or pacifica.org. That's wpfw.org or pacifica.org.
Back on We Ourselves, I'm Gloria Minot. My guests are Lynn Twynan. Our network is Courage Network. It's an online network. Robina Niaz is the founder of Turning Point, and she's also the executive director, and Angelica Harris of Excalibur. We're talking about Amnesty International's upcoming festival, and we are inviting you to call with your question or comments, number 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. We're going to try to accommodate as many calls as possible. Please give us a call, 202-588-0893. That's the number. Let me go back to Robina Niaz and talk a bit more about the work of our organization. Would you talk to us about what a typical day is like within that organization?
A typical day, of course, is we have a social worker. We have a youth meeting, we have a discussion meeting, we're trying to train our members in our community for this work. And so phone calls come in from various agencies, sometimes the administration services, calling us to say that there is a woman they want to meet. Or a woman will call herself. And often what happens is the woman will say, I'm just calling up to get some information. Not about the friend or the sister. So, and she'll be very hesitant to say that she wants to do that. And we try and talk to women. They don't speak English. Their language, if they speak English. And try and make them speak English. And you want to be able to send a message that they can trust that our services are free and they are confidential. And so much so that our address is not divulged anyway. We have a few box address because we want to make sure that we can be safe from each other. And so the staff and everybody else works here on the field. And sometimes if the woman is in crisis, she calls and she hears a voice and she gets some validation and support, and then we won't hear back from her for many days. And we know that she had the need to reach out to somebody. She did that, and she went to back off. The one time that they do immediately get in touch with us when they've been referred by the agency, the administration for children, that's that is when the school or some other source has found out about the abuse going on. A child has spoken in school about what's going on in school. And even though the child may not be directly abused, that the fact that there is domestic violence going on is taken very seriously by the school social workers, and then they are mandated to report to the ACS. And what we find out over and over is whether it's ACS or the other agencies often are not culturally and they're not trained and equipped to address the cultural issues that surround these women and the realities that they're living. So they don't understand their faith, they don't understand what their culture is, and I often try and remind them. We come from cultures where there's very solid family support networks. So if I'm going through a bad time, or I am out of a job, my family will step forward and offer help. They don't wait to ask. It's the opposite over here. And the women have a hard time reaching out to them. And so that's why our job is to reassure them. And once they come in, then we connect one of our social workers, either me or my social worker, Johanna, will connect with her, do an intake, try and assess the situation, and then provide weekly counseling to the woman. And the other thing we try and do is we help them find the strength of their own voice. Our mission doesn't say that we empower any Makwan. We say we help women empower themselves because we come from a premise where we believe that women have their strength inherently present in them. They just need a little bit of support to find it. And once they find it, we've just heard from our other two colleagues how they can then use that strength to transform their own lives as well as help other women and children. So that's where we are coming from.
All right, let me just go to the phone. I think I have Tessa on the line. Tessa, what would you like to say?
Hello?
Yes, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Could you please make your comment brief, please, because we have a limited amount of lines and we're trying to get quite a few calls in.
Okay. My question is, to solve women's problems, there are only two ways. One is educating society, especially men, and why is it women groups do not get together and create an educational organization where they can teach men, especially, but society as a whole. The second, why is it Amnesty International doesn't have a special section dealing with women political prisoners, like the Burmese, like the Ethiopian political leader who is in solitary confinement for...
All right, Tessa. We got the message. Amnesty International, the women here are participants in the program that's coming up. It's a festival. We understand that you are concerned about what's happening in Burma and other parts of the world, and we wish they could give you an answer to that. But if you were listening to them, you would hear what their work is and who they're trying to help. And of course, we do welcome your call. 202-588-0893 is the number. Please call with your question or comment. Please make your comments brief. Let me remind you once again that my guests are Angelica Harris. The organization she heads is Excalibur. You also heard from Rubina Niaz. Her organization is Turning Point. And Lynn Twynan. Courage Network is the name of her organization. 202-588-0893 is the number to call. I am taken aback, Rubina, when you said that the organization that you head, that you have a P.O. box because you fear for your staff and so forth. Would you discuss that a bit for us?
Well, here's the thing. I think we need to understand that at the heart of any abuse is especially domestic violence when women are being abused by their husbands. At the heart of it is the need to have power and control. And often when women seek help, when they are trying to leave abusers, they are in danger. We know of instances just last year in February, Pakistani woman who had filed for divorce, had an order of protection up in Buffalo, was killed by her husband because she was trying to get out of the country. So that's why the women are in dangerous situations when they're seeking help, because the man or the abuser is feeling like the control has slipped out of his hand. And then they are angry at people who are trying to provide help or support to women who are trapped in abusive marriages and relationships. And that anger is directed sometimes at us. We get phone calls from people. I have received threats from one particular client's husband. And so, because Turning Point is an organization, we have to make sure that our security, we feel safe, our staff feel safe, our volunteers feel safe, and the women who come to us know that they're going into a space which is not public, even though we are not a residential. So that's part of our reassurance to them. And the first time they come to us, we ask them to come to our subway stop, and one of us will escort the client and bring them to the office. And that kind of confirms for them that we are actually true to our word, and we're trying to provide services as confidentially as we can.
Lynn Twinen of Courage Network, most of your work is done online. How does it work?
Well, through Courage Network, folks that visit the website can sign up, and everything is completely moderated on the website. Protect all users, of course, and they can sign up just very similar to creating a Facebook profile, and they are able to communicate with other survivors and advocates, post information about their work or stories with their struggle with domestic violence, and if there is something that they want other people to know about that they're doing to raise awareness to domestic violence or abuse, all they have to do is submit that information to our email address, and then we'll review that information and we'll work on securing it and spreading the word about their work online and through other news media that we use. In addition, we are always looking at ways to address topics and issues of concern. And I want to go back to comment that the gentleman made, which is addressing men's organizations or awareness for men for domestic violence. Because there's so many people and so many facets of the issue. Domestic violence is not just physical. It can be psychological, emotional, sexual, financial. It can be isolation. There's a lot of misconceptions about the issue in general. And so one of the things that we do with Courage Network help raise that kind of awareness. For example, if anyone visits the site and looks at our feature interviews, they will find that there are organizations out there that work with just men on the issue. For example, we feature Tony Porter, and he's with the Call to Men. His organization is phenomenal. They have training, workshops, coordinate events just to discuss the issue of domestic violence with men and what men can do, well-meaning men can do, to help raise awareness about the issue, because abuse continues in part because people are not willing to speak up. And silence is a big factor with domestic violence and all forms of abuse. The victims are scared. The victimizers are also scared because they've got stuff going on with them that they don't know how to address as well. And so A Call to Men is one organization. Men Stopping Violence is another organization that is run and operated by female executive director, and she has a phenomenal support team working with her to help spread the awareness about domestic violence among males and what men can do to help stop it. They're also in partnership with the U.S. Department of Justice, for example. Then there's the Family Violence Prevention Fund. They have programs that are geared for fathers in particular. What can fathers do to help raise their sons and raise their families in such a way where violence is not a reoccurring factor in the generations to come? And you know, it's often very hard to reach out to the abusers as it is sometimes with victims because people don't want to speak up for various reasons. But if we can talk about the prevention aspect and we can talk about what can we do, how can we educate our young people, how can we educate those that are victims but also educate those that aren't yet victims, these are all the things that we, you know, try to discuss on the network in the coming months, in the coming weeks, in the coming months. We'll be featuring more and more organizations that are talking about all these different aspects of domestic violence and how it's affecting families in our society. Because this is a global issue. It just doesn't affect women, and it's affecting men. Men are victims of domestic violence in the home, whether it's child sexual abuse or they're being victimized by their intimate partner. We're also talking about, in the coming weeks, gay, lesbian issues with domestic violence, because there's so many stigmas surrounding that. And so you have all the specialty organizations, and they're out there, and they're working with the individual groups that are being affected. And that's something that Courage Network is proud of, is proud to be able to, we're proud of being able to try to bridge those gaps.
Here in D.C., there's an organization called Men Can Stop Rape, and they also work with men and boys on this issue. I'm going to give you the time to just sum up. Angelica, you go first.
Hi. Well, my Excalibur reading program is a program for children and young adults to teach them how to read and also to use the pages of the text, of the written word to help them help become the hero for themselves. I also use a character and development story program within my teaching to help children and young adults and adults become the character, become the hero within themselves to attain their holy grail, whether it's being to survive domestic violence, to get out of domestic violence, to get over an illness, a learning disorder, a mental illness, whatever it is. My Excalibur reading program is as such to help people attain the holy grail within themselves. They could find my program on at www.angelicaharris.com and click on the Excalibur reading room and find out exactly what it is all about. I'll be in the workshop on Saturday morning at Montgomery College, and I encourage women and students to come and listen to my workshop and listen to how they could become a hero with themselves and use writing as a tool to free themselves from the demons in their lives. And that is my summary. And I hope I'm excited to meet Rubina and Lynn in person. I've been speaking with them on the phone and on emails, and it's going to be great to be able to meet them finally in person.
All right, Rubina, it's your turn.
Hi, Turning Point for Women and Families is based in New York. Our website www.turningpoint.org.
We're not hearing you, Rubina.
Our telephone number is 718-883-9400. I share a lot more information, but I know we're running out of time. I do want to urge listeners to go to our website and read up about our program for young Muslim girls. We just on Saturday included a workshop series called Mecca to Manhattan, Muslim Women Moving Mountains. And this is about creative teaching young girls leadership skills and finding creative ways of expressing their lives. And I do want to say that we work very closely with men. There is a group out there called Men Against Domestic Violence, and we work with the imams locally and nationally to raise awareness in the community. We believe that we have to partner with the men to address this issue, as Delica said, and Liz said, that this is an issue of everything. And I will be moderating Saturday morning's conference at Amnesty Rights Art Festival, 10 a.m. Please come, and here are other wonderful speakers. There are eight of them, and I think it's going to be wonderful weekend. I look forward to being there, and I hope any of the listeners from the area will come and hear all of us speak and learn about our work.
All right. Would you give the number again?
718-883-9400. That's the point number. We do provide training. We talk to people. We do interfaith work. And basically, the whole idea is to help develop understanding of this issue so we can do more preventive work and have less to do with crisis intervention. Crisis is there, but it can be reduced if we are focusing on preventing it.
All right. And Lynn, you just have, under a minute.
Okay. You can reach myself and visit the online community Courage Network at www.couragenetwork.com. With Amnesty International first ever Human Rights Art Festival, we will be conducting a display called the Clothesline Project. Many of you may have heard of it, but if you haven't, you are able to tell your story by writing on T-shirts and hanging them up on a clothesline. So if you've been a victim, a survivor, or if you know someone, very powerful display. It's a 20-year-old display, and we felt the need to continue that tradition that first began about 20 years ago, and it's continued across the country. We'll be at the Caprice Arts Center, and of course, there are a panel of women such as myself discussing.
All right, Lynn Twynan, CourageNetwork.com. Robina Niaz, founder of Turning Point. Turning Point is at Dash.
Yes.
NewYorkNY.org, is that correct?
Yes.
All right, and then, of course, AngelicaHarris.com of the Excalibur Project. Ladies,
yes,
thank you.
They could get me at 917-704-4905.
All right, 917-704-4905. I'm Gloria Minot, sitting in for Ambrose Eileen Senior. We ourselves, thank you, Kareem. And next, Joni Eisenberg, in D.C.